good evening to our soul audience member. Good to see you. I declare this meeting number 4, held on Monday the 27th of February 2017, open. All persons in attendance are reminded that it is council policy to record council meetings. The audio recording of this meeting will be made available to the public on council's website for a period of 12 months. In accordance with the council policy, I'll ask the acting general manager to confirm that the audio recording has commenced.
Yes, it's on.
And he has so confirmed. The first item that I need to do tonight is to acknowledge and pay my respect to the Tasmanian Aboriginal community as the traditional and original owners and continuing custodians of this land in which we gather today, and acknowledge elders past and present. In attendance tonight is myself, Councillor Wass, Councillor Atkinson, Councillor Berry, Councillor Fox, Councillor Percy, Councillor Bastone and Councillor Winter. From staff we have our Acting General Manager, Mr Ferrier, our Chief Financial Officer, Mr Breen, our Executive Manager, Engineering Services, Mr Reeve, our Manager, Environmental Services, Mr Dool, our Manager, Governance and Property Services, Mr Smee, our Manager, Development Services, Mrs Tyler Moore, our Senior Planning Officer, Mrs Stevenson. We also have our Media and Communications Officer, Ms Wilcox, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. Apologies. We have two on leave of absence. That's Councillor Paul Chadden and Councillor David Grace. And we also have an apology recorded for Councillor Deputy Mayor Reet. The first item on page 2 is confirmation of minutes of council meeting number 3, held on the 14th of February 2017, and I have Councillor Fox and Councillor Percy seconded that the minutes of council meeting number 3, held on the 14th of February 2017, be confirmed. Councillors in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, that is carried unanimously. Also on page 2, the workshops held since the council meeting on the 14th of February. There was one on the 20th of February, strategic planning or long-term financial plan and budget. Declarations of interest. I ask councillors if they have a declaration of interest, whether they would please declare now. Councillor Bastone, you're playing with your light. Press the button in front.
Perfect. I own a block next door to something that... next door to a block that's up, that's listed for a development application. It doesn't really affect me, but I do own the block next door to it.
So you'd like to say that under DA, if you could be the number, please?
DA 2016545. I'll stay in the room.
Okay, so you have a block next door, but you're not any way affiliated with that. Okay, thank you for that. We'll move to page 3 and we come to questions at the meeting. There is a question from Mr Reed regarding a review of council accounts and a response from Mr Breen, the Chief Financial Officer. On page 4, a further question from Mr Reed regarding accounting and financial management of Kingborough Council and a response from our Chief Financial Officer, Mr Breen. On page 5... we have questions on notice from councillors. I'm getting ahead of myself. So at this stage, I'll go questions without notice from the public. Are there any questions without notice from the public? And thank you. I'll just ask Councillor Percy, please. So when you're ready, Mr. Reed, thank you.
Pardon? Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My question is to you. Will the Mayor detail to the ratepayers of Kingborough the cost of his recent fact-finding visit to the Whitsunday area, including the cost of the airfares, accommodation and entertainment hire cars, and all related activities incurred by the Council? Can the Mayor further tell the ratepayers of Kingston how this contribution to the deficit being run by the Council is in their interest? And why could it not have been deferred and your time better spent looking at real measures to cut the expenditures of the council and bring the budget under control, with the aim of lifting the burden of rapidly rising rates off the backs of the ratepayers?
Delighted to respond to you on that, Mr. Reid. That's fine. My response will be in writing. We'll go in the minutes as well. My airfares are approximately $880. My accommodation of approximately $420. Meals and transport I didn't keep a track of. But as I indicated to staff when I was invited to attend, I said I would do so, providing it was my cost. The amount that council paid for my trip to the Whit Sundays is a big fat zero. So council incurred no cost whatsoever. So I'm very delighted to tell you I put up the entire 100% of the bill. Further questions? Yes. Thank you, Mr. McBride. Mike, please. Oh. Can we have a mic, Mike?
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mayor, thank you for the opportunity, and the councillors and staff, thank you again for the opportunity. I come as a political refugee from the Huon Valley. The only good news is that we've got an order to build a Viking boat out of Huon Pine, and Franklin's got this contract to build the Viking boat down there, starting straight away with Peter Laidlaw, a Huon Pine one, never been built before. So on the strength of that tourism, has Kingborough Council any thought or inclinations towards amalgamating with the Huon Valley Council? I ask this question seriously, that you might entertain the idea of amalgamating with Huon Valley Council, a council that is probably breaking even and probably has no debt, but I ask that you do so that the Huon Valley Council cannot return to where it was, and that Kingborough might be able to give tourism a fair shake and give tourism a fair go in the southeast. And I'm sincere about that, and I thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. McBride. I think all I can say on that, while the council or elected members have been dismissed, the Minister for Local Government, Mr. Gutwin, indicated that no decisions could be made until there is elected members. But thank you for your question. Mr. Burgess.
Thank you, Mayor. With the state treasurer's pension has water at the moment.
Thanks, Mike. And the indication that serious consideration has been given by the government to taking over Tazwater. Do council, just out of curiosity, do council records indicate that at the time of the creation of Southern Water, which of course has become Tazwater, as to how much money council had spent, the capital cost, in other words, of all of the installation of water and sewage infrastructure, and an indication of what the depreciated value was at that time, with, as I say, the real possibility, seemingly, that the Treasurer is rather keen on taking over Tazwater.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Burgess. I think the Acting General Manager will have to take that on notice, unless he has some information. I think from Councillor's perspective, we were told that the infrastructure that we lost to the Water Authority was in the order of $110 million. Do you want to add anything, Mr. Burgess?
Just to add in response to Wayne's question, yes, Council did have a valuation on the assets which were transferred across, and that forms the basis of the dividend that we pay. So the information is there. I guess we could just clarify the exact amount for you.
Thank you, Mr. Ferrier. No further questions. We'll move on. We're on page 5. Questions on notice from councillors. There was a question from Councillor Bastone regarding the Kettering Fire Brigade and a response from Mr. Smee. Also on page 5, in relation to Kingston Park funding by Councillor Winter and a response from Mr. Ferrier. On page 6, a question from Councillor Winter regarding the Taruna Bowls Club and a response from Mr. Breen, Chief Financial Officer. The next item is questions without notice from councillors. Are there any questions without notice? Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you, Mayor. With regard to the jet boat business recently established at Conyngham Beach, what requirements, if any, have been placed by council on the business, especially in relation to customer parking?
Mr. Ferrier.
Through the chair, we have issued a permit under our bylaw, but I'm not aware of the conditions, or they don't come to mind in relation to
parking as such. So I'll have to take that on notice, I'm afraid. Yep.
Thank you.
No further questions, councillors? Okay, we'll move on. Motions on which notice has been given. Councillor Winter, if you could just read your motion. I'm not really sure that a report be provided. Is that what it...
A report will be provided to Council identifying options for provision of a second turf cricket wicket in Kingborough. The report will include estimated capital and operational costs.
Thank you. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Fox. Councillor Winter.
Look, hopefully it's fairly straightforward notice of motion. I'm just asking for a report. I think all councillors are aware that the Kingborough District Cricket Club is currently... has communicated to us that it has a shortage of turf wickets, quite a specialist field preparing turf wickets, and the current situation sees particularly junior cricketers out of Kingborough actually travelling to Pondfield to play home games. That seems like a non-preferred option to me, and this motion simply calls for a report to be provided to us so that we can assess what the cost, the upfront and operational costs of maintaining such a facility might entail.
Thank you, Councillor Winter. Councillor Fox.
I certainly support the motion to have a report because I think the matter deserves investigating and further discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. No further debate or questions. I'll make the following comments. I will support the recommendation from Councillor Winter. I do recall when we took it out of Kingston Beach Oval, we took it out because of cost, and it was prohibitive just to maintain without installing another one, so I would be very interested to see what the costs will be. Councillor Winter, I might have spoken against. I didn't mean to, and as I said, I'll support it, but if you want to close debate, I do. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Winter, seconded by Councillor Fox, provided to Council identifying options for the provision of a second turf cricket wicket in Kingborough. The report will include estimated capital and operational costs. Councillors in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposing? It's carried unanimously. Petitions, and we're on page 7, petitions still being actioned. There were no petitions still being actioned. And petitions received in the last period. At the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. We'll move on to page 8, and the open session of council adjourns, and it is 5:43, that we're now sitting as a planning authority, and the first one is a report of officers delegated to authority for the period 1st of February to the 15th of February 2017, and a recommendation on page 9. Thank you, Councillor Bastone, and thank you, Councillor Berry. Councillor Bastone, you have a question or comment?
I do have a question. In light of the jet skis running off the beach at Conyngham, which is used as a home registered business, I'm wondering what the home registered business for DA 2017/42 is.
The second last item. For no permit required, and I'll ask Mrs. Tyler Moore if she's aware of that, or Mr. Stevenson, whichever.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I'm afraid I don't have the exact detail on me. I could take it on notice and provide the answer.
Thank you, Mrs. Tyler Moore. Further questions, Councillor Bastow? No? Any questions or comments, councillors? If not, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Bastone, seconded by Councillor Berry, that the report be noted. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? That is carried unanimously. We move on to page 10, development application 2017/16 for a shed at 332 Redwood Road, Kingston, for Mr. Moses Otto. And a recommendation on page 14. Thank you, Councillor Percy. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Berry. Councillor Percy wish to open debate?
No, I think it's a reasonably small shed, 26.5 square metres. The issues that were raised by the representatives were detailed there, sufficient answers there. The site coverage is only 33%, where it could be 50%, so it's certainly not a large shed that's going to take over the property. And there should not be any visual impact from the shed, as it is a small construction. So I think, and also I think one of the problems was the stormwater, or perceived problems with stormwater, was fully reticulated, so that will go not onto the property next door. Also complies with setback requirements. And I think the problem that they perceive with the sun was going to rise further to the north. So I think all those raised by the representatives, were detailed and answered sufficiently. So that's
why I support this. Thank you, Councillor Percy. Further debate, councillors? If not, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Percy, seconded by Councillor Berry, that in accordance with Council Policy 1.1, Delegated Authority Policy, the Planning Authority resolves that the report of the Manager Development Services be received and that the development application for Shed at 332 Redwood Road, Kingston, for Mr. Moses Otto be approved subject to the following conditions, and there are three conditions as printed. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Councillors opposed, please say no. Carried unanimously. We'll move on to page 19, a development application for expansion of existing marina and to provide 14 additional marina berths and 15 additional car parking spaces, incorporating stage dredging and reclamation works at Ferry Road, Kettering, and disposal of dredge material at Wittens Road, that's CT52619 Folio 1, with access over 19 Wittens Road, Kettering at Ferry Road, Wittens Road, CT52619, Folio 1 and 19, Wittens Road, Kettering, for Mr. R.S. Kyle. There is a recommendation provided to us on page 43. Thank you, Councillor Berry. Thank you, Councillor Percy. Councillor Berry, would you like to speak to the item?
Yes, I'll speak very briefly. First of all, this is a very complicated and it must have been a very arduous development application for staff to handle. I mean, there are a great deal of issues that had to be investigated, and I think that the conditions... I went to have a look at the site today, and not that having a look at water actually helps very much, but one does get an idea of what's proposed, and I had some mild reservations, but it seems to me that the concerns that have been addressed in the conditions certainly satisfy me that this complicated and difficult development application has been dealt with appropriately.
Thank you, Councillor Berry. Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll quite go over what Councillor Berry's already said, but I think that the conditions, there's some very important things amongst that. I'm glad that the public walkway has been addressed and the retaining wall has been addressed, and also the issues that Mask raised about what boats can be moored when and what size and so on. I had a couple of questions. On page 34 it talks about, it said, recent clearing and site preparation work or evidence and would appear to not have been authorised by council. Is that something that's so long ago that we just let it slide, or what's the... is there any action to be taken on that?
Mrs. Stevenson, are you able to assist Councillor Atkinson?
Another one, sorry. Through you, Mr. Mayor. The reference, just trying to find where you were referring to, but I think that's in relation to the dredge disposal site at Wittens Road.
It's on page 34, the second last paragraph, the third sentence.
So there is some evidence of clearance, but it has occurred some time ago. This application's actually been going on since 2014, and the site inspections that were conducted around that time were actually couple of years ago now, but certainly part of the conditions in this recommendation are to address the rehabilitation of the site. So yes, there has been some vegetation removal and loss, but the conditions around this will actually require that site to be rehabilitated and to enable the vegetation to regrow. So I think that will be the conditions address that loss in that way.
Right. Yeah, no. And good news, Mr. Stevens. I guess it comes back to the next point I was going to make. I was glad to see that there was conditions in there about demonstrating that the field was suitable for rehabilitation, that the field was suitable to grow plants, and that we're taking a bond for the management of that for 5 years. I think that's all appropriate. I was interested in condition 9 as well, in that it seemed a bit subjective. Spoil to be managed in a... must be managed such that odour from the spoil cannot be detected in any neighbouring property. It's a very subjective sort of condition. Is there any way of quantifying that? I mean, one person could say they could detect it and someone else could say that they can't.
Mr. Stevenson.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The provisions of the Environmental Management Pollution Control Act would cover the issue of odour, and so there'd be provisions in there in relation to what is considered to be a nuisance and what isn't. So I think that, yes, you're right in the sense that one neighbour may say that it smells more than another neighbour may, but there's provisions within EMCA that would control what is considered to be a nuisance and whether action was therefore required.
Good, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stevenson. Yeah. Further question?
Yeah. Yep. Otherwise, I just think, you know, it's good that there's, you know, been such work put into this and such, a complete set of conditions, because as Councillor Berry said, it's a very complicated application and involves two sites, not just the dredging work but the disposal of the spoils. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Councillor Bestow.
I have a couple of reservations about this. On page 25, C... it says the existing use of the site is for a commercial jetty catering for fishing boats, including refuelling facilities. The redevelopment of the jetty and car parking provides improved facilities for existing commercial operations on the site. But on page 34C, it says the development does not provide retail services, therefore this provision is not relevant. So I see that as a contradiction. So, are they going to be allowed to sell fuel?
Thank you. I'll ask Mr. Stevenson to respond.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The difference there is between retail and commercial. So the commercial operations include the refuelling of the boats. The retail side of things is they're not retailing fuel as a retail service. It's all part of the marina operations as a commercial business. So the provisions on page 34 where it's talking about a retail service is talking about the primary development being a retail business that's selling things to the public. This is a very restricted thing where it's refuelling the boats that are actually berthed on that marina. So it's not the same context. It's a commercial operation versus retail.
Okay. And my other question is, with the area, the walkway area, is there a provision for it to be kept clear so that people can continue to walk along there while these dredging operations are going along?
Mr. Stevenson.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, there is conditions in there which require the construction environmental management plan. There's conditions, engineering conditions regarding, if I can just find the conditions, regarding the traffic management plan. So there's a traffic management plan required. So all of those plans will dictate what happens during construction and also post-construction. So obviously there will be issues with construction activities occurring and needing to make it safe for pedestrian access and public access through the area. The walkway itself probably won't be finished, you know, operational, but yeah, but there will be provisions in those documents that need to be submitted to council for approval, and they're listed in condition 16, which is 16D, the traffic management plan. So that includes both, like, the vehicles and pedestrian traffic. So I think they're covered in the conditions.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stevenson. Thank you, Councillor Bestone. Councillor Fox.
I have a note on page 38 that the seagrass beds have diminished to a point where they're so small and they're in the middle of the bay. And I'm concerned about that comment because the seagrass beds will have been declining on a regular, steady, ongoing basis. And it's a shame that these things aren't recognised as being significant. It's basically death by a thousand cuts. And we have one small bed left in the middle of the bay and there's been no consideration for protecting that small bed and increasing it. I was wondering if the staff could comment on that, please.
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The issue in relation to the seagrass beds in relation to this application, there wouldn't be any potential to require this application to do anything to protect or enhance the seabeds because they're outside of the development footprint for these works. That would be a matter that would obviously have to be dealt with in a different manner. But as far as this development application is concerned, we couldn't impose conditions on them for works that are unrelated on a site that's not impacted by this development.
I guess you've got it on good authority that they will not be impacted because seagrass beds are damaged by siltation, and by dredging that causes siltation, and there is a tidal movement in that bay and heavy flushing of that bay which will cause that siltation to cover the seabeds, the seagrass beds. So I just wonder whether we've actually got professional advice to this effect on those particular beds, or is it, if it's just a general answer.
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The report that's been submitted with the application was by a company called Marine Solutions, who we have received a number of reports from and who, as I understand it, have the appropriate qualifications to do this assessment, and they're certainly very familiar with the seagrass habitat in the bay there and elsewhere in our municipal area. It's also been reviewed by council staff, by our environmental planners, and so I'm comfortable that the information we have is correct and has been done by suitably qualified people. There's also conditions in the permit requiring, I'm just going to try and find it, but there's another one requiring a finalised dredging plan to be submitted and the construction environmental management plan, and that has to include information about the timing of the dredging and there's I think it's point E in condition 10 that's got to be in accordance with the appropriate manual from DPIPWE, the Soil and Water Management and the Dredging and Land Reclamation Guidelines. So there'll be a construction environmental management plan that needs to be submitted to Council for approval before works can commence.
I have two further questions on. I don't really know at what point in time these issues would be addressed, whether a lot of the people, and this is an increase in use basically, and whether there are toilets and showers provided for people on the boats, and also a dump station in Kettering, whether there is any facility for getting rid of black water, or a pump out facility to empty boats. And it's long been of a concern to me that people don't put the holding tanks in their boats because there are no dump stations in Kettering, and the answer why there are no dump stations is because people are expected to leave the berth in order to discharge. And I just feel that in 2017 this is not an acceptable situation that we're in Kettering. When you look at the increase in boats in the last 10 years only, it's astronomical. And I know personally quite a number of people are living permanently in those boats with no dump-out facility, and they have not enough toilets and shower facilities on land.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Do you wish to comment on any of that, Mr. Stevenson? No. I know it's not covered by this. Thank you. Something for us to consider. Further councillors wish to debate? If not, I'll ask Councillor Berry to close debate.
I don't have anything I need to add to the debate. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Berry. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Berry, seconded by Councillor Percy, that in accordance with Council Policy 1.1, Delegated Authority Policy, the Planning Authority resolves that the report of the Manager Development Services be received and that the development application for the expansion of existing marina to provide 14 additional marina berths and 15 additional car parking spaces, incorporating sage dredging and reclamation works at Ferry Road, Kettering, and disposal of dredged material at Whittons Road, that's Certificate of Title 52619 Folio 1, with access over 19 Whittons Road, Kettering, for RS Kyle, be approved subject to the following conditions, and there are 20 conditions listed from pages 43 to 48. Councillors, those in favour, if you would say aye.
Aye.
Those against? That is carried unanimously. The next item is on page 54, so the open session of Council will resume at 6:02. Thank you, Mr. Stevenson. Thank you, Mrs. Tyler-Moore. The item on page 54 is the Capital Works Budget Review, and there is a recommendation on page 56. Thank you, Councillor Percy. Do I have a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Bastone. Councillor Percy.
Yeah, I think it's great that we get this capital program report at this time. I think those that went on the bus tour with Mr. Reeve the other day, he gave an indication of why some projects were behind, and that he's thinking that most of them will be achieved by the end of the year. There are a couple that have been held up because of Taswater and others. I think it's a good report, and I think we should accept the recommendation there. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Percy. Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you. I had a question. And this might be my ignorance in interpreting the tables. On page 54, in 2.3, it now says the major asset classes, and when I add those up, I get 13.27 million. And then on page 59, it says a total of 18.61 million. So I'm just trying to understand what those two numbers are.
All right, I'll ask Mr. Reeve to give you a response. Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Those figures there on page 54 don't include the figures for Kingston Park, so I think that's where you'll find the difference is there.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Percy, seconded by Councillor Bastone, that A, Council note the progress of Capital Works Program, B, Council defer the works in Inbeach Road from Channel Highway to Bandela Road, Margate, with a view to undertaking a future date in conjunction with planned Taswater works. Councillors in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Carried unanimously. Next item is on page 60. Kingborough Waste Services Board appointment.
So moved.
Councillor Fox, you've moved the recommendation. Thank you. And Councillor Percy. Councillor Fox.
As was indicated in the report, I think it's appropriate for Mr. Shelley to be reappointed for a second term. It's better not to have the appointment of directors all at once, but to stagger them, and we asked for that information at the previous meeting, and that's been provided very clearly to us. There are no reasons why not to appoint Mr. Shelley, and until we decide otherwise in terms of KWS at all, this is the appropriate motion for us to be putting at the moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Winter.
I'm trying to look back on the query that Councillor Reed put before she moved the deferral motion, and unfortunately he's not here, but from memory we were looking for the Deputy General Manager, who unfortunately wasn't there on the evening. From my point of view, I was looking for a reason why we would not go to a public, go out to market, if you like, for a chairman, and for a compelling reason not to. And I suppose I'd open that as a question to the Deputy General Manager on just if you could explain to me why we wouldn't be looking more broadly at who might be best to fill this position.
Thank you, Councillor Winner. Mr. Perry.
Through the chair, I guess it's possible that every time a directorship comes up, we could go out to the open market and see who is out there. But I think in doing so, we lose the accumulated skills of the directors that we've actually got on the board. And I think the balance has to be drawn between utilising those, you know, the experience that the board members have gained having been a board member, and compared to the opportunity of finding somebody different. We when we originally sought board members for the board, it was quite difficult. We're not talking about a large field of people out there that have very senior business experience that would be interested in necessarily going on this board. But so I think the main reason is it's just striking that right balance between getting somebody who has good experience in the business of Kingborough Waste Services versus saying, well, let's throw it out to the open and we might find somebody better. And I think in this particular case, this director has only served one term and has been an extremely good chairperson, and it would seem the wrong thing to do to go back out into the public so soon, and it may be that if we do have directors on a board such as KWS, that it would be best to give them a second term if they're doing a good job, and maybe have an informal policy that after two terms we go back out to the public, for example. But I think somebody who's only been there for one term and is doing a good job is certainly, it does seem to be a bit pointless to go back out for a second term. So to go back out for expressions of interest.
Thanks. I think I recall now one of the questions we got to last time, and that was a question of when the current chairman was appointed in 2014. What was the process we went through at that stage? Did we go to market at that point?
Mr. Ferrier?
Yes, we did. The previous chairman, Mr. Ron Ward, resigned, and we went out into the open market and we called for expressions of interest. By memory, I think we obtained three or four expressions of interest at the time, and we had a selection process, and the current incumbent was selected from that process.
Certainly more satisfied this week with that response than last time. I guess I still come back to the same outcome, that I don't see any harm in going to market for a chairman. The KWS business, by any financial measure, hasn't been operating successfully in that it has negative assets on its balance sheet, and it ran a significant loss last financial year, although that has been somewhat remedied by the increase in gate fees this year. It seems to me that with the performance of the business, it would be prudent for Council to at least explore other options. As I said, in an alternative motion that I'd move, I'd move if this was lost. As I said last week, that motion would strongly encourage the existing chair to nominate for the position, and I think a fair and reasonable and a good outcome would be that the chairman may well be successful, but at least as councillors, in the spirit of good governance, would be satisfied that we'd explored all options to ensure that this business is being run and chaired by the most competent person. And I'm sure, as I've said and want to reiterate this meeting, as I did last meeting, I cast no negative aspersions on the existing chairman, who I'm reliably informed is doing a good job. I just feel that this is a very important council business, and we need to ensure that we've got the best possible chair in the position of chairing it. So I won't be supporting the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Winner. Councillor Percy.
Thank you. I agree with Mr. Ferrier's summation there. I think Mr. Shelley has got good business skills and experience. I think Council have had some concern in the past about KWS's performance as far as financial performance, but that was mainly because they haven't had the ability, KWS haven't had the ability to set the gate fees. And that was not the way to operate a business, I think. Since we've set them at a reasonable amount, it's a marketable amount as well, so it's also a recovery cost amount. It's now breaking even. I think it might even be making a profit. So we also, the council's got good representation as far as Mr. Ferrier and Mr. Reeve. So I definitely support this motion to have Mr. Shelley continue in his role. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Berry?
Thank you, Mayor. I listened carefully to what Councillor Binder had to say, and fundamentally, if we had been looking at the end of a second term as director, I would have come on board, but the current director has only been there on one term. Boards of management, my limited experience, it would be exceptionally unusual to actually terminate someone's appointment after one term as director, and I cannot see any really good reason for doing so. I don't sit on the board of KWS. I don't know what goes on at the board meetings. And Councillor Winter's correct in that certainly the previous financial year the figures were less than promising. They do look a bit better. I don't think that we can put that all at the feet of the current chairperson, but fundamentally the reason I'm supporting this is that I think it after one term as a director that someone should be reappointed for a second term unless their performance has been much less than satisfactory, which there is no evidence of.
Thank you. Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you. I'll set a question initially in relation to what Councillor Winter raised. What would be roughly the cost of running an expression of interest process?
Mr. Ferrier?
Through the chair, the cost is not great. I mean, it's just putting an advertisement in the paper and calling for expressions of interest. So cost is not a factor.
Okay, yes, just one idea. Yeah. I'm undecided on this. I mean, I know previously I supported the position that Councillor Winter's holding, which is there's no harm in seeing who else is out there, but I'm hearing two of the arguments that are put, that it's reasonable to give someone a decent term. Having said that, I mean, we appoint someone for 3 years, a three-year term, for a reason. But, yes, as others have said, there's been no negative indication that Mr. Shelley's performance as a director and as the chairman. We've expressed no complaints, and we're happy that the performance is improved. The financial performance is improving, so I think in this case I will be supporting this motion.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Councillor Fox, would you like to close debate?
I do appreciate when we get the chairman come in and speak to us in a very open manner about the quarterly reports or half-yearly reports in a very transparent and open fashion, and also the fact that basically KWS is at council's pricing and policy mercy. So even though Councillor Winter's concerns may tend to reflect on the director, they should also reflect on our own policies and pricing situation, which we have remedy to some extent. There might be more room for improvement, but I don't think it's fair to blame the messenger for what may be seen as a possible concern. I think it's important that we are consistent in our approach to directors. The previous director has enjoyed two terms, and I think it's incumbent on us to uphold the professional behaviour and integrity of Mr. Shelley and reappoint him for another term. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Percy that Council approves the reappointment of Mr Peter Shelley as Non-Executive Director and Chairman of Kingborough Waste Services for a further 3-year term as from 1 April 2017. Councillors in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? We'll have a division or a show of hands, please. Those in favour of the recommendation are Councillors Bastone, Percy, Fox, Berry, Atkinson and Wass, and opposing the motion, Councillor Winter. Motion is carried. On page 62, Kingston Park Community Hub CAF, and there is a recommendation on page 64. Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Thank you, Councillor Berry. Councillor Atkinson.
I'm pleased to see this report and this motion in the agenda because it shows that we're moving forward with the Kingston Park development. And I was particularly pleased to note in the options that were considered the possibility of social enterprise running the cafe. I think this is an important step in creating activity across at that site. We have to move things forward. It'd be more than just a building shell, but there have to be businesses there, and this is, I think, an important part of the process. I did have a question about the timing and what our expectation is as to when the building will be available for this cafe to operate, and presumably that depends on roads and all sorts of things, so I'd be interested in what the expected timing is with this, and I guess whether this is when this expression of interest process would start, and we don't want to be premature, I guess.
Thank you, Councillor. I'll ask Mr Ferrier to respond.
Through the Chair, maybe Mr Smee can comment as well in relation to this is his report, but I can comment in regard at least to the construction timeframes. I have to lodge a grant application tomorrow for seeking some funds, and just while I mention that, earlier in the agenda I did mention in a response to a question from Councillor Winter that we're seeking a $2 million grant, and it's more likely that that will be a $2.8 million grant that we'll be seeking. So the idea is that if we obtain that grant around about the middle of this year, we'd be looking to commence construction of the community hub at the end of the year, and that gives us predictably 2018 to construct the community hub, which is probably much the same time frame within which we'll also be constructing the Boulevard Road, and also we hope the Department of Health and Human Services are also constructing the health centre as well. So it could be a busy construction year if that is the case. So look, that's when the community hub will be built. We'd like to think that it's ready for the summer at the end of 2018. How that fits in with the cafe and why we're asking for expressions of interest now in advance of building the community hub, I'd prefer if Mr Smee answers that aspect of the question.
Mr Smee.
Through the Chair, the issue we have is that the tender specifications and the development application for the facility need to be lodged within the next few months. So the intent would be to advertise this expression of interest process very shortly. Now, it is acknowledged that it may be hard for proponents to lodge an expression of interest for a facility that's not yet built. And in an ideal world, we would have that ability to be able to show a prospective proponent the facility that they're expressing an interest for. In this case, we'll be showing them plans. And it may be that we get no interest at this point in time and we simply have to make a call on what we think should go in the facility. And I guess that's one of the options that's open to council now, is simply to say we want it to be a social enterprise and we would like staff to prepare the specifications with that in mind. I guess what I've done, bearing in mind the situation we're in and how far out we are from actually
having a building for someone to occupy is go for a very broad process that tests the water to see what's out there, and then we can see what we get back and work with that and report back to council further.
Thank you. So we're talking about a 2018 commencement, roughly 2019 commencement. Sorry, you're saying the building will be complete by 2018. Yeah. Thank you. So I commend the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Thank you for that summary, Mr. Smith. Councillor Berry.
Thank you, Mayor. But my concerns are really all around this business of timing and what we're expecting. I mean, if I look down the discussion, item four main options for the operation of the proposed cafe, council owned and managed, that's, agree, that's not a terribly good idea. Privately operated on a commercial basis sounds to me like that's a pretty sensible idea, as does the social enterprise program. But I can't see what difference it makes. I mean, it's a cafe. I can't see that a council-owned and managed cafe is any different from a privately operated. Perhaps someone can explain all that to me, why it would be different. What surely decides the sort of information we want to get is the size of the cafe that's being built. I mean, if you've got 30 seats or whatever it is, you're clearly going to need a commercial kitchen. So I listened carefully to what Mr. Smee had to say, and I understand all that. But if I had the remotest interest in providing an expression of interest, I'd certainly want to know when this is all going to happen. I mean, seriously. So we get one or two responses. What are we going to do with that information? I'd like to know. It's not sufficient. We're going to throw it all out. I think what has to be decided is what size the cafe is going to be, and everything else really follows on from that. But perhaps someone can explain to me why anybody would put in an expression of interest except those who are desperate for work in about 2 years' time.
Thank you, Councillor Berry. I think Mr. Smee was saying also about the specifications for a fit-out, but I'll ask Mr. Smee to respond again, please.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. The difference between the different options in terms of the fit-out is that for a social enterprise, it's more than likely that council would provide a cafe completely fitted out with a commercial kitchen, and the social enterprise would come in and operate that facility. A commercial operator may have different requirements with respect to the type of product they're going to offer, and often that commercial operator will bring that specialist equipment with them. So that's the difference between the two operations and how it impacts upon the specifications for fitting out the cafe. In terms of what we expect to get, as I say, we test the water, we determine what level of interest is out there, and it then gives us someone who we can work with in developing the facility to ensure that it's built to the required specifications that is going to mean that the facility is usable from when it's opened, as opposed to having to retrofit, pull equipment out, etc.
Thank you, Mr. Smee. Councillor Percy.
Yeah, I'm similar to Councillor Berry and Atkinson. I just think the timing of it, just when I first saw this, I thought it seemed a bit random. And that's in the timing of it. I'm just thinking, will we get more responses when we have something on site that will provide the customers for this particular cafe, I suppose? And also, where does it fit into the consultants that we saw a couple of weeks ago? What have they suggested for this? I mean, the whole site there was going to be cost neutral, I believe, and if we start to provide buildings for community organisations, you know, has that been put into the budget or not? So those are the sort of questions I want to know. One thing I don't want to see in this whole project for Kingston Park is the budget blowing out, and if we're starting to do add-ons to what we've budgeted for, then I could see that happening, and I'm just a little bit wary of those things. So,
I'll ask Mr. Ferrier to comment, but we're talking about the community hub now, not the other part. So, Mr. Ferrier.
Through the chair, the community hub has always been an integral part of the development plan for the whole site. So when we develop the budgets and the cash flows and so on for the Kingston Park development as a whole, we take the community hub as a given. It's the same as we take the public open space or the playground and such as a given. I mean, they're the public or community based components that we're providing on this site, which are effectively paid for by the commercial and residential components. The consultants, Navaya, that we've employed to assist us is to maximise the revenue opportunities from those commercial and residential components so that we can actually pay for these community-based components. So Kingston Park is very much an integrated development, which is, it is multi-use, commercial, residential, community, social, recreational, and that was always the intention. And to be frank, that's one of the reasons why we got the land off the government cheaply. Because they sold it to us on the basis that we were going to develop it in that way with all those community benefits. So, the community hub is part of that scenario. So it does come at a cost to council, but the idea is that cost is then balanced by the revenue that we obtain from other properties that we're able to sell.
I probably misunderstood. It said the operation of a standalone cafe. I'm looking at I thought it was standalone as a outside of the community hub. So.
Through the chair, the cafe is within the community hub. It's part of the community hub. So within the community hub, we would actually obtain some revenue. So it's not just a facility that costs council. We'll get revenue from the cafe. We'd hopefully get some revenue from some other spaces, and obviously we'd also get revenue from regular users and people who hire the facility at various times as well. So it is a facility which will generate revenue as well. It probably won't generate as much revenue to pay for all its costs at the end of the day, but it will generate revenue, and the cafe will be part of that.
Councillor Bester.
I understand what Mr. Smee is saying about needing to retrofit or people bringing their own things in, but surely we need to know, and they need to know, the size of the space, the square meterage of what it's going to be, and then they decide. Or are we going to decide whether we want a cafe or whether we want a restaurant in there? It's very nebulous, and I mean, we're doing the building, and so what are we building? Are we building a little cafe that has seats for 20, or are we building a 100-seat restaurant? It makes a difference in how people go about putting their tenders in.
Mr. Ferrier?
Through the chair, the actual design of the community hub is essentially settled now. It's finalised. So it's based upon the winning design from the competition. We've firming up that final design, and that design determines the actual space for the cafe. What we're talking about now more is about how that cafe is fitted out within that space. So the actual size of the cafe is determined. We know how big it's going to be. It's more about how it's going to be used and how that might need to be fitted out. And as Mr. Smee said, it may be that for one operator, we need to go in there and provide all the facilities and the white goods and everything else, and for another operator, they might like to see not so much work be done by council, and they bring in their own equipment. So it's that difference that we're trying to tease out.
Yes, I understand, but I still don't know. I did see the plans. I don't know how big it is. Is it actually reasonable to think that a social enterprise group can run it? I mean, is it a big area or is it a small cafe?
Mr. Smee?
We believe that it is achievable to be run as a social enterprise, and the intent that is within the development plan is that it's a small cafe that complements the community hub. It won't be a big bustling restaurant.
Councillor Fox?
I'm thinking about the long-term future of that particular building, and the more flexible we can be in regards to provisions for the cafe. It's a bit like a sports facility. If you can play soccer and you can play cricket and you can play football on the one oval, that would be better than just having it locked in to a certain position. And even though we might get tenders saying we want to do something that requires a lot of equipment and we provide that equipment, they might not last. So it's probably important that we do the minimal amount of work but make it usable by the maximum number of peoples, if you get my drift. So I'd be going in that direction rather than specialising to some group that has got great ideas and prepared to put money in, but it might not last the distance. But we've got to leave it to the staff to assess the proposals and see what comes up. There might be no expressions of interest, so, but I think we should go to expressions of interest. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. I'll ask Councillor Atkinson to close debate.
Thank you. Look, I mean, they're interesting points that people have raised and all quite valid. I think that I still think the process is worth going through because it will hopefully open our eyes a bit to what, you know, who is out there that might be interested in running this and what things they see as important, not we as, you know, councillors and relative amateurs think is important here. So they may raise issues that we haven't thought about or have ideas we haven't thought about. More information is always better, I feel, so I think this is a worthwhile process. Thank you.
Councillors, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Atkinson, seconded by Councillor Berry, that expressions of interest be sought for operation of the proposed Kingston Park Community Hub Cafe. Councillors in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
No.
We'll have a division or a show of hands, please. Those in favour of the motion are Councillors Percy, Councillors Fox, Atkinson and Wass, and opposing the motion, we have Councillor Widder, Councillor Bastone and Councillor Berry. The motion is carried. We'll move on to page 65, Kingborough Public Toilet Strategy. There is a recommendation on page 67 and of course the strategy follows thereafter. So 67, the recommendation. Thank you, Councillor Fox. And thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Councillor Fox.
We're all moving a little quickly there, but I think this is brilliant having this public toilet strategy. When I was the chair of the Access Disability Committee for many, many years, we did the survey of all the toilets in Kingborough, and we have improved a handful of them, but most of them are exactly the same way as we observed them at the time. They're pretty uncleanable, some of them, but at the same time I must say the council staff and the contractors do an amazing job with what they've got. Every time you go to a toilet there is toilet paper and there is soap in the hand basins, and it's guaranteed as clean as it possibly can be compared to other councils that I've visited, and it's not nearly as good as what we are, so I think we can really be proud of it. But I do think it's important that we've got a long-term strategy, a 10-year strategy to upgrade these toilets. I'd love to be able to do more than $250,000 per year. But I guess that is achievable, and with council staff guidance, the priorities have been set, which I agree with. And it's been based on a very excellent matrix, which was also provided by the Access Committee at the time, or pretty close to it. So I think it's fantastic that we're moving ahead in this direction, and I'd love to hear how enthusiastic other councillors are.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Bastone.
I just have a question on page 66, number 6, 6.1. The wastewater disposal system servicing a number of facilities do not meet contemporary environmental health standards.
if the state government takes over Taz Water, will they also take over this type of function?
Who knows?
No, such
no I don't believe that is the issue, but I'll throw back to Mr. Smee to give you the response. Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The issue that I'm referring to there is we've got a lot of public toilets that are on old septic systems, and in this day and age they should be on an alternative wastewater treatment system that is far more environmentally friendly. But I couldn't see Taz Water ever wanting to take over responsibility for septics.
Thank you, Mr. Snee. Councillor Berry.
Thank you, Mayor. I think this report is excellent. It does provide us with up-to-date information. My only concern is that we're moving too slowly. I think I've been on council for 17 years. Now, Councillor Fox can correct me here. As far as I'm aware, we have constructed two new public toilets in that time, one at Gordon and one on Blackmans Bay. I don't know that we've constructed any other new toilets over 17 years. The report points out that the majority are over 30 years old. I agree entirely with what Councillor Fox said. I think they're excellently maintained. But they're old. And, I mean, if you want a litmus test of what someone who knows nothing about a council, you ask them what they thought of the public toilets. And if we seriously think that the fact they're just clean is acceptable, well, if we've got no money to spend under any circumstances, yeah, keep them clean. We did have a policy of replacement. I mean, I agree with all the recommendations. I see four of the toilets that have to be replaced. I don't think it says when. It does. I think we visited Conyngham Beach toilet, which needs to be exploded almost immediately, I would have thought, on our trip. But my concern is we're just moving much too slowly. We have to spend money on our toilets. We did have a policy of replacing a toilet once a year that lasted about 1 year. That's how we got Gordon built. Now, people who visit Gordon, I don't know if we can say they actually love the toilets, but let's say that they really appreciate the facilities that have been provided for them. They're just excellent. They're actually new. Relatively, 2010, I think, or 2009 they were built. So I think it's a disgrace, actually, that we haven't spent more money on and are apparently not planning on spending more money on toilets. So thank you very much for the report. I agree, and I think it's great that we have a strategy. But as a council, I think we need to think seriously about spending a bit more money.
Thank you, Councillor Berry. Councillor Persick.
Certainly agree with Councillor Berry there, because there's a litmus test for most people, for the council, to see the condition of our toilets. And I also congratulate the staff for putting this together. It's a good report. I'm just wondering, when you look at all these toilets, and I said they've been there 30 years, they might not be too good to look at, but they're certainly solid. And I'm just wondering, with the current replacement with Colourbond toilets, I wonder what their life would be. I doubt whether it would be 30 years, and I'm just wondering if somebody, perhaps Mr. Reeve or Mr. Smee, could comment on the expected life of these replacement toilets that we seem to be using these days, or will we be actually replacing them with brick structures or rock structures? Yeah.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, the research that I've read suggests that we should be working on a asset life cycle of 25 to 30 years for a modern toilet facility. As I've indicated in the strategy, that the fine detail of the design would be something that we would determine in consultation with local stakeholder groups. So I don't want to say that every facility that we replace will be a colourbond one, because that's something that would be determined through that consultation process. But you, certainly you're right, the assessment shows that a number of our facilities, whilst dated, are still structurally very sound, and one of the options, rather than pull them down and build a new one, may be to get a little bit creative architecturally and come up with a facility that utilises the existing structure but makes it look modern and presentable, and still retains what is a usable structure.
And Clarence City Council did that on the beach below Blunston Arena. Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you, Mayor. Everyone's an expert on toilets. A couple of comments on the strategy, particularly. I noticed I couldn't see a date or an author, and a particular date would be useful on there, just so that when we pick it up in a few years' time, we know when it was produced. I was looking at the principles in 3.3 on page 72, and it says visual amenity, environment sustainability, equity of access, public health and safety, financial responsibility and best practice. There's nothing about them actually being pleasant to use. I don't know how you put that in words, but you know, they look great and they're clean, but they're not at a light. That's a shame. I don't know how you expressed that, but it would be nice if there's some way of saying they're actually a nice place to go. On page 76, it talks about features. There's no mention of female hygiene disposal units. There is a mention of baby change facilities in high use areas, and I'd love to see in a list of those, list of which toilet blocks we have, which ones do have baby change facilities or which ones are intending to have baby change facilities. And similarly, I couldn't find anywhere, I noticed that some of them we were changing from 24-hour access to only access during operation hours or business hours, but somewhere a list of which ones are going to remain 24 hours and which ones are going to have restricted hours would also be valuable. I was glad to see the mention of unisex cubicles, and I think that's obviously something we should be heading towards in any new construction. I'll go too far on my wish list. I know that you talked about the signage being ISO 7001 2007 compliant, but if the signage could be as gender neutral as possible, that would also be preferable. But otherwise, you know, I think it's fantastic that we're doing this. Everyone's made the points about we haven't invested in this bit of infrastructure. It's something that people do judge the municipality on. I think it's fantastic that this has been brought up, and you know, apart from my small picky points, I think it's a fantastic strategy. So great, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Councillor Bastone, you had a question before, so
yes,
you can speak.
This is, in some ways, another question also. This is about the, on page 102, to close the toilet at the Woodbridge Hall. It's non-compliant, it's a steep entry, and it says it's little used. The shop opposite is actually fairly recently won best corner store in Tasmania, and they actually get quite a lot of foot traffic up from the boat from Peppermint Bay as well. And the suggestion that people are able to use the one in Silverwater Park is quite a long way further on. So the cafe is actually, the shop actually has a cafe running in it and a tourism shop, as well as being a local store. And I just think, you know, maybe it's not a good idea to close this one public toilet that's near a shop that is quite well used.
And I'd agree with your comments on that, Councillor Bastone, because a few times that I've used it when the hall hasn't been open, other people are either coming in or going out. So, yeah. You got a question, Councillor Atkinson, or just left the light
no,
on?
No, I just left the light on.
Any further discussion, councillors? Otherwise, I'll ask Councillor Fox to close debate. Councillor Winter, do you have a question?
Yes, well summarised about the love for toilets. It's been a wonderful debate. I've enjoyed all of it. My only query was around frequency of toilet cleaning. It occurred to me, and I asked the question without notice about it a little while ago, during the summer months we have some really popular beaches. I didn't notice it, and apologies if I missed it, but could we consider multiple cleaning of high-volume toilets during the summer months?
Page 78, Councillor, if you have a quick look at that one. I know I'd seen it, Mr Ferrier indicated there. It's 5.3 under cleaning.
Right, well, the Blackman's Bay toilet. Well, actually, here's a question. How do we measure the high, what is a high volume or low volume? Is that just anecdotal evidence, or do we actually have a more scientific way to calculate how used a toilet is?
Thank you. Mr. Smee.
Now, through you, Mr. Mayor, as indicated in the report, it's a subjective rating and it's based on our assessment of where the toilet's located and the usage of adjoining areas. And there is a scientific way you can put a counter, but we haven't done that.
Okay. I guess my contention here is that perhaps at those high-frequency public toilets, particularly I'm thinking Kingston Beach and Blackmans Bay Beach, and again this is anecdotal, so I don't have any science behind what I'm saying either, but it does seem to me that we have literally thousands of people at these beaches, and as has been pointed out, councils are often critiqued on unusual things, but public toilets being one of them. Maybe this isn't one for this debate, but in fact, well, I'll bring this up at the start of next summer, that perhaps we could do more in the cleaning area during the summer months, so that probably wraps me up.
I'll just add on that same page, Councillor Winter, that the installation of the last clean signage, because as the report indicates, it's as only as clean as the last person. So I think the last clean signage will go some way to alleviating some of those fears. Okay, I'll ask Councillor Fox to close debate. Councillor Fox?
The other point that I noted is that the National Toilet Register has been updated by staff, which is really good, because I do think a lot of tourists who come to Tasmania want to know where those toilets are, and we've got a lot more elderly residents travelling within the state, and it's important to them. One thing that I note, though, all our halls have got signs on them saying owned by Kingborough Council, and the toilets probably that I see in the picture, most of them don't say or have a logo on them to say that they're actually council owned or maintained, and if they did, people might want to contact them if there are problems. But that's not really summarising, that's just an extra point. And I think it's really exciting to be moving forward, and I can tell in the feeling in the room that everybody's pleased to have this report. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation move. Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Atkinson, that Kingborough Public Toilet Strategy dated February 2017 be endorsed. Councillors in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Is carried unanimously. The next item is on page 105, information reports. Thank you, Councillor Percy. Thank you, Councillor Fox. The first one is the Mayor's activities. Obviously, over that reporting, there has been obviously a tragedy at Blackmans Bay and also the commemoration of another tragedy in 1967 has taken a lot of time throughout our municipality. But I'm happy to answer any other questions before I do. Item 29 on page 109. There is a Kettering meeting at 4:30 on this coming Thursday, the 2nd of March, councillors. I did send out an invitation for you to attend, so if you're available and wish to attend that, that's at 4:30 p.m. this coming Thursday. Councillor Percy.
Can you just give us a briefing on the reason for meeting with Mr. Sonam Cheddet?
Mr. Cheddet?
Yeah.
Mr. Cheddet, as I've met with him twice, the first time that he has purchased a block of land and is looking to do some development work, and the second time he came in was with the general manager, the acting general manager now, and I think it was Manager Development Services, so he could run through his proposal with seeing whether council had any objections and
to his basic concept, just to give him and his architect some ideas going forward, so that he's looking at building a property adjacent to Kingston Park.
Adjacent to?
Kingston Park. Councillor Atkinson?
I guess just on 2 points. One, you mentioned verbally about the meeting at Kettering. It's a shame that it's 4:30 on a Thursday. It's a very inconvenient time for anyone who works to get to a meeting, but that's not actually in your list of communications. The other one is a general comment. I mean, this is called Mayor's Communications. Is there anywhere we can see your outgoing written communications? You know, where there are letters that come from the Mayor, how do we see those? From the Office of the Mayor, you know, with, I know there's things you send out to various groups, supporting things and so on.
Yes, I haven't really thought of that going to you. Most of those are fairly straightforward issues.
I'm not particularly you should distribute them, but that sort of thing I feel like we should have access to, just to see what's being written on behalf of the council, on behalf of the mayor.
Don't have any issues responding to that by sending those around.
And whether, I said, whether you're just doing by email or whether they're just available in a folder somewhere or online, I don't mind how it's done, but I feel like it'd be...
I'll talk with Amanda tomorrow and we'll come up with some plan.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep. We'll move on to the second one, which is the report on the GATT audit panel workshop in Hobart on the 13th of September 2017 on page 110. And nice to know that it's interesting to hear that Kingborough has been used as a template by some other councils. I'm just wondering there, Councillor Atkinson, whether you'd like to just give us 1 or 2 minutes of that session.
It's hard for me to remember back, that's so long ago that I went to it. Apologies for how long it took to present this report. Look, it was a surprisingly interesting session. I'd never been to one of these workshops before, and it was, I guess, a mix of topics. I mean, the information from Leon Lester from Legat was, much of it's happened now, but it was his view of what's happening coming up in the next 12 months or so. The presentation about internal auditors opened my eyes to what internal auditors were about, which was also something that I had never thought I'd be interested in, but it was actually quite fascinating to see what they do and what they get involved with. To hear from the SES about the realities of their work, and one particular thing that was interesting there was the increase of number of calls that they're getting, and whether that's indicating that the triviality of some of what they're getting called out for, and whether people are becoming less reliant or something on themselves, that they need to call the SES for more and more minor things, but it's certainly increasing the workload on them. And the panel discussion with the audit panel chairs from around the state was also very interesting, just to hear the degree of development or sophistication of how the audit panel's behaving, everything from, you know, barely set up to functioning well, and interesting debate to do with some councils were aghast at the idea that councillors who weren't on the audit panel could attend the meeting. They thought if any other councillors attend that the whole thing would dissolve into chaos, which is so different from the culture of our audit panel. So that I found that very interesting discussion. Apart from that, as I said, I'll put the link there to the workshop overheads and slides, so if you want to glean more from those, go ahead and click it. Thanks.
Thank you for that update, Councillor Atkinson. Any questions to Councillor Atkinson? No? Okay. We'll move on to the next item, and that's the financial report for the period of 1st of July 2016 to 31 January 2017, from pages 111 onwards. Councillor Percy.
As previously, I've sent these questions to Mr. Breen, and he's replied, and all the answers given me are acceptable. I thought I would bring them to the council so other councillors are aware of them as I am, and also the public if anybody wants to listen to the audio. So the first question was on page 113. I just said the cash on hand seems low, which is 10.964 million, compared to the unexpended capital works of 15.175 million. This includes 4.2 million for Kingston Park. So apart from borrowing for Kingston Park, because we have said that we're going to do that, will council have enough cash to fund the balance of this year's outstanding CapEx, which would be $10,975,000, excluding Kingston Park, plus the normal operating costs of council, and what was the expected balance of cash on hand and investments at year ends. And perhaps I could ask Mr. Breen to reply if he's got his answers there. Thank you.
For you. Breen, would you like to respond, please?
Yes, through the chair. Essentially, Kingston Park project owes council some $2 million at the moment, so that's expected to be repaid when there's borrowings associated with the payment for the purchase of the land. So that will certainly boost the numbers. The expectation is it'll be around about $5 or $6 million in available cash at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. Right, page 117. Depreciation currently, 7 months to January, has a variance of $514,514. And if you annualise that, it would be around $881,000. We've done a forecast of variance of to budget of $700,000. Have we done any work on this to determine the possible variance, as an adjustment around $200,000 at year-end would be significant?
Mr. Breen?
Yeah, through the chair, during February we've received the data for the revaluation of both stormwater and building assets. Up until now it's been an estimate, and also the componentisation of the stormwater assets. So really at the end of this month, so the numbers that we'll be doing sort of later this week, will have a much up-to-date figure and be able to give a concrete answer to that question.
Mm-hmm. So there's no early indications of...
I would imagine it's probably going to be a little bit over 7, but probably more like about 750 at this stage.
Good. So we don't like surprises, June, do we? Has the amount of $700,000 for carrying amount of assets retired been reconciled to support the $700,000, or is it still an estimate?
Mr. Breen?
Through the chair, the asset management team have reviewed the potential write-offs for the year in regards to retired assets. The number at this stage is looking around the $700,000 mark, but it is quite variable depending on the amount of projects that get capitalised at the end of the year. So if a project is still under construction, then the loss is not included in the finances for the year. So it can be a little bit variable, but certainly if based on current expectations, the number around 700 or less will be the figure.
Mm-hmm. On page 115 on the comments on financials, grants capital. The grant for the Margate Snug Shared Path has already been received and recorded. Through our bus tour the other day with Mr. Reeve, he said that there could be possible delays to commencing the path beyond this financial year due to land acquisitions. Is it correct for council to record it as income if no work has commenced? If it is, why has no variance of budget been recorded against this line item on page 117?
Mr. Brad?
Through the chair, yeah, look, under the current accounting standards, grants received need to be recorded as income in the year they are received, so unfortunately there's not that matching of timing of inflows and outflows, but that's the current accounting standards. In regards to that particular item at this stage, there's some uncertainty around timing of the roads to recovery funding. It looks like there'll be about $400,000 that will roll over into the next financial year. We won't actually be receiving it this year. So hopefully that one will offset the other, but it's still not certain at this point.
Right. They don't become part of the underlying surplus or deficit, do they? No. Good. On page 117, sale of assets costs includes $231,000 for the loss on for the sale of 160 Burwood Drive to the Girl Guides. As we received the land at no cost from housing and sold it at no cost to the Girl Guides, would you please indicate the process entries that have gone through council's books in those intervening years, including acquisition, revaluations and disposal, as there is no forecast variance to budget for this?
Mr. Breen?
Yeah, through the chair, the land would have been recorded as it was a gifted asset at the time of receipt. So there would have been an asset land would have been recorded, and the corresponding entry would have been I guess income from a gifted asset, so it would have been essentially revenue for the council. The original land value was $200,000, and twice during the period it's been revalued to get to the $231,000, so up by $31,000 would be the revaluation amount, and then clearly we disposed of it for $1, so the difference is a write-off. No forecast variance for this expense. This is not included in the underlying performance of the council, and really things like sale and proceeds of sale are difficult to predict.
Yep. We've only got a couple more. So. Materials and contracts, page 114, says the sports centre ceased the holiday program, which contributed much of the $60,000 favourable variance. Please provide a short explanation of what the holiday program involved and who were the beneficiaries of this program.
Mr. Brad? Through the chair, this program was organised by council but essentially run by the gymnastics centre. So council undertook the administration tasks and accepted responsibility for the collection of funds, which had sometimes proved to be a bit problematic for council. So essentially council had an income from receipts for this particular program, and we had an expense for outgoings, which we paid to the gymnastics centre. And sometimes we made a small surplus, other times a loss, and there was quite a considerable administrative burden associated with the program.
Mm-hmm. The last couple of years we've had a few concerns at the end of the year about the employee's provisions coming to light at the end of the year, so I'm just wondering if we looked at the employee provisions recently and adjust them to reflect the end of year balances.
Mr. Bray? Through the chair, this year for the first time we've included an accrual for employee provisions based on our estimated outstandings at the end of the financial year. We'll review that in March. I guess you really need to get over the holiday period to get a really firm idea on where that provision is going to land. So during March we'll review that and work out whether our accrual is adequate or not.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to thank Mr. Breen for providing those answers today at short notice, so thanks very much.
Thank you, Councillor Percy. Councillor Berry?
Thank you, Matt. I just really have an observation. It's on page 114, operating income rates. Sort of almost every year we do this, we seem to have a higher than estimated income from rates. So far we've got $378,000, but $329,000 in excess of the budget estimate. Now, that's quite a lot of money, and I just wondered how come the budget estimate is kind of out to that extent. The problem I see is that I'm certainly amongst that group of people, councillors, who believe that we have an income problem. It becomes a little bit difficult explaining to people who don't know a lot about council affairs. When they look at the financial affairs, they see our income from rates is $378,000 above the budget estimate, that we've actually got an income problem. You know, I know it's a bit naive, and I apologise for that, but maybe there's some simple explanation that our income from rates is so much higher. I would think we'd be better served by having an overestimate at the time of the budget. So maybe someone can comment on that, but I do have a difficulty selling the idea that we have an income problem, which I do believe that we have, as being amongst the lower rating councils and yet amongst certainly the higher socio-economic. Thank you.
Mr. Breen, would you like to respond, please?
Through the chair. If you recall, that the previous year we had a revaluation of our all our properties change of rating structure. During that process, for a good 8 months, the Valuer General didn't value any of our properties. They basically cease at a point in time, and then once the revaluations run through our books, they commence running those supplementary valuations through and catching up over the period of the year. When we did our our budgets, which was in March last financial year, our expectation was that the Value General was completely up to date with all their supplementary rates, and we based the budget on the numbers that we had at that point in time, and to find out that a month later a substantial a number of properties were run through a supplementary program, and that basically resulted in around about $300,000 worth of additional income that we didn't expect. So certainly our expectation is that for the next financial year we'll have a number much closer to the budget when we finish the year.
Thank you. We'll move on to the Kingborough Climate Change Innovation Lab, which is on page 119, and we have Mr. Dool present tonight, so we can answer questions or have those questions answered. Move on to the Environmental Services Quarterly Report, which starts on page 125. Pardon? It is unfortunate. I understand. We'll move on to Community Services Quarterly Report, which starts on page 134. And while you're looking at 134, highlight there on page 133 that I think Mr. Dool has, and or Mr. Reeve has already indicated to us that these things are happening. No questions? On that basis, Councillor Percy.
Could I just say how good it is to get those reports too? It just shows how busy that Council's activities are. When we look at things like, well, they're all very similar, but the community services, certainly getting out there amongst the community and providing a large range of activities. So it's very good. Have we had these in the past in this format or not?
No, I think we've had one in this format or two in this format. Am I right? Yes.
Yeah, certainly some nice photos in there too.
Perhaps it would be remiss of me if I didn't add my trip to the Whitsunday Regional Council, which is in Mr. Dool's report. That was very flat out time from when the feet hit the ground up there to when the feet left the ground up there. Very, very appreciative of us attending their municipality and discussing. We've got 336 kilometres of coastline in Kingborough. They've got 750, thereabouts. Apart from cyclones, which they have and we don't, thankfully, they have many, many items the same as us. They did do a tour for me from the sea, from Early Beach to Cannonvale and back to a place called Shingle Beach. And they certainly have these increasing water levels, particularly with storm surge and tides, and certainly under the impression with the cyclones, they have more and more properties being exposed. They're also concerned about the rivers in high torrential rains, and they're also concerned very much into sediment, which will affect the Great Barrier Reef. So they have a very similar to what we have, if you like. They're not as bushfire prone as we are, but they certainly are bushfire prone as well. A lot of what we're facing, they're facing, and I think the MOU that Mr. Dool has arranged in partnership with them will be a great opportunity for us to learn from them and them to learn from us, and hopefully a few other local government centres around the country will come on board perhaps with that, so that we can all learn together. There hopefully will be down in October,
at that stage, it would be hopeful that the innovation lab is up and running and they can see what it's happening. They certainly are not far behind with their innovation lab. They think it's a great thing, and it was interesting and certainly a nice, from my perspective and our perspective, when there was a question asked by the local newspaper about why, you know, you're virtually one point of Australia to the other end of Australia, and why did they hitch themselves up with a place called Kingborough? And their response was that if you want to get on board, you look at the leader in Australia and you tag on to the leader of Australia. So on that basis, that was a nice response. Mayor Wilcox does have a double L in his name, so it's W-I-L-L-C-O-X. But apart from that, happy to elaborate further, perhaps after the meeting. Councillor?
Just in your response to Mr Reid before, where you said that you footed the bill for all the costs, is there any reason for that? I mean, it's a council project that we've committed to.
Mr Doole asked me whether I would go, and I said to Mr Doole when I heard that, I said, yes, I'm happy to go, but it'll be at my expense.
Right.
I didn't believe it was necessary for council funding.
Yeah, well, it's a count. We've endorsed it, so I don't know.
Yeah.
It's your decision.
Yeah. Thank you. Councillor Fox?
I'm just really impressed by the reports, which are so succinct and so varied, and so there's such a breadth of community activity, both in the environmental section but also in the community services section. And I just wanted to touch on one, which I thought was absolutely brilliant, and was organised. The Taruna Art Trail was organised by the local communities. They took months and months to organise that. The whole of Taruna foreshore and the park area was full of the most amazing sculptures. But unfortunately, it was only for one day, and the next day it was gone. And it's such a shame that something, I mean, if you look at the picture on page 138, that sculpture was internationally outstanding. It was absolutely brilliant, a great big bird made with metal and lights inside it, and it was an absolutely beautiful work of art. But at the same time, there was a cormorant on the rocks, which was made by a 12-year-old, and it was washed away by the tide, and he had to quickly reassemble it. But that, I think, was such an amazing piece of art in the community. And to see that coming out of a small community like Taruna, I really think we should give them support if they want to do something again, to try and get it lasting a wee bit longer so that more people can enjoy it. Because for the amount of work that went into it, I don't think enough people were there to appreciate it, because it wasn't there long enough. Even the locals felt, because they had something else on Saturday, they couldn't go on Sunday and it was gone. But anyway, I don't want to be negative, I just want to be positive, because it was absolutely brilliant. And when you look at the activities and the events and the work that goes into all these things and how much is happening in Kingborough, it's really something we can be proud of, and it's all generated by community for community, and it's outstanding. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Any further comments, councillors? I'll go back to page 105, the information reports, moved by Councillor Percy, seconded by Councillor Fox, that the following information reports be noted: 1 to 6, Mayor's Communications Report of Legat, Audit Panel Workshop, Financial Report, 1st of July, 31st of January, Kingborough Climate Change Innovation Lab, the Environmental Services Quarterly Report, and the Community Services Quarterly Report. Councillors in favour of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Is carried unanimously. The next item is on page 146, and this is confirmation of items we dealt with in closed session. Thank you, Councillor Percy. Thank you, Councillor Berry. That in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulation 2015, the following items to be dealt with in closed session as listed. Councillors in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? That is carried unanimously. The closed session. Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. I take it that was a yes. And Councillor Percy, that in accordance with Regulation 15, the Local Government Meeting Procedure Regulation 2015, the Council move into closed session. Councillors in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? That is carried unanimously.
and in accordance with the Kingborough Council Meetings Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, the recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease.